Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today. And thank you.
Good morning. This is the Main Course OG. We are actually taping today here in studio. Today is Friday, May 31st. You will be hearing us on the air next week on Thursday, June 6th. But we couldn't pass up an opportunity to have Nancy Newsom from Princeton, Kentucky, a very, very, very famous and well-respected ham lady who cures amazing, delicious country ham down in Kentucky. And she's here for some events this week, so we are taking the opportunity to be in studio with her. I am also in studio with my co-host, Patrick Martins.
A.K.A. Joy Behar.
A.K.A. Whoopi. From The
View. You're Whoopi.
I'm Whoopi. All right. We also have with us Eric Koss on the line, publisher of the Alameda Sun.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. We have George Weld of Egg Restaurant in Williamsburg.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us. And we have Herbert Lipscomb.
Good.
There he is. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
I didn't know if it was a bear. There was a quarterback for the New Orleans Saints that had that same spelling, but it was pronounced a bear. So you're Herbert.
Correct.
Okay.
You prefer Herb? Herbie?
It doesn't matter. Not Herbie.
Not
please.
Herbie.
Do not call Herbie Herbie. He will go bananas.
All right. No Herbie. And we have the one and only Nancy Newsom Mahaffey. But for this, we're calling you Nancy Newsom.
Nancy Newsom is fine with me.
Fantastic.
It's more simple.
Your business was founded, when do you say it was founded? 1917?
Yes.
And there have only been two cure masters, your father and you, during that whole span?
Yes. Wow. Yes. He was curing for about 50 years, and then I've cured for almost 30.
And would you say that you're one of the last ham curers left? There are very few in general, but of the very few, that you might be one of the only ones using ambient temperature and not using temperature control rooms?
Right. I would say that there are very few left like that because of the desire to be huge and large instead of small and great.
And would you say the river that is near you that runs next to the ham plant influences the flavor?
Yes, I would say it's a spring. It comes out of a cave because the town that I live in sits in a cave system. And yes, I would say all of the environment makes a difference in the flavor of the ham.
And last question before Emily takes us to our main segment. Did James Beard love your family ham? And oh, that was pretty much the only American
yes.
cured ham he ate?
Well, I know he ate many American hams, but once he found us,
He never.
There was no
back.
Turning back.
He kind of, he used it to teach within the Culinary Institutes of America. Started our mail order for us.
That's incredible. Did you let him? Did you send them to him early? And did he have a special ham aging room, or you sent them when they were ready to eat?
Well, we always send our product, no matter who it is, when it's ready.
Fantastic.
Because we feel like we know what age they like and what age they may not like and what they might appreciate the most.
Good. We'd like to hear that. Ready to eat. So we are going to jump right into our segment called The Weekly Based, and we're going to start with a little round robin question. What's the furthest you or your product or food has traveled?
Or vision, yeah.
Yeah, your style, your...
Singapore, I would say.
Yeah? I thought you were going to say Spain.
Well, now my ham has traveled to Spain. Yes, I have a ham in Aracena, Spain. About 60 miles from the Portuguese border, and it is the only American ham. So we represent America there, which is very close and dear to my heart.
It's in a museum, is that correct?
Yes, in a museum.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then Singapore? What brought your ham to Singapore?
There was a new restaurant over there, and a meat broker contacted us. We sent the hams to California. He was on the plane with all of the hams that we sent and flew over with them to this new restaurant and this new hotel over in Singapore.
Just in his luggage?
Now, Patrick.
Sounds like it might have been a cargo plane.
So, George, what would you say?
I guess Tokyo.
Oh, right, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about
who
egg.
You are. And
We opened a couple eggs in Tokyo with some partners 2 years ago. So we've had those going for since then, and probably going to open some more. We're going to try to get Nancy's ham over there at some point.
Sounds like you need a broker and a cargo plane or large suitcase.
We might need a suitcase full of bribery money, maybe. But.
The image I have of Japan, maybe stereotypical, is that they can do anything, very well and do it efficiently, except breakfast. For that, they need to partner with someone from Brooklyn to teach them how to do breakfast. It is funny that they don't just copy it and do it yourself, but there's a certain tetwar, I like to say. There's a certain skill set that you just can't develop out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's like, you don't want to... When you go to a Japanese restaurant here, you want to see Japanese people running it. You don't want to see a bunch of white guys back there making sushi for you. So I think they have the same attitude towards what we're doing. So,
mm-hmm. Are there a lot of expats that are eating at your restaurants, or is it mostly local people?
It's a mix, for sure. Like, there are people who have been, missing biscuits and gravy for years and are happy to get it. And there are locals, and there are, especially in our first location, there are a bunch of tourists from around Japan and around Asia as well.
I think even in New York City, we spent the day with you yesterday at Egg, and Nancy was going around meeting a lot of your customers, and everyone was tasting her ham. And there was a large number of tourists. I mean, you absolutely have a neighborhood, a stronghold in the neighborhood, but we were talking to people from Switzerland. There were quite a few people speaking Spanish from Spain and from Mexico. I think that... Yeah. And then last night's dinner, the number of people from Kentucky who just wanted to have a taste of their upbringing.
I think we had most New York Kentuckians were at that event.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they were all there. So I'd be interested how you would answer this, Eric. I mean, has your actual physical newspaper, does it get delivered to the president of Japan or something every Thursday morning?
Not directly. We have this feature called The Sun Shines Everywhere that encourages people to take the newspaper around the world and take a picture of themselves with it in foreign places. So I believe our paper has been to Singapore, and probably the most famous achievement is that it's been to the top of all 7 of the highest mountains with this one Alameda resident who made it her personal goal to get to the top of Everest and Kilimanjaro and Mount McKinley and all the highest points in the world. Wow. And she took our paper there, and there's photographic evidence to prove it, which is kind of cool.
Was it an issue you were proud of?
You know, when you're at the top of Everest, I guess the photos don't necessarily come out that clear. So I'm not even sure which issue she had up there.
So next question. I'm looking forward to hearing Nancy's answer to this, but maybe we'll end with Nancy. What country store, like mom and pop shop, has had the biggest effect on your life? Mine was definitely Gentile's Market, my first job out in high school. Little family shop. 80% of their business is call-in business. And I was, you know, from rich people on the Upper East Side who want the guy to deliver it. And the delivery guys would ride me around on their bikes. And I stocked the shelves. And I'm still friends with Anthony. They buy our bacon. He's third generation. So that's probably mine. So what's yours?
I also grew up in New York City. And I think that there was a mix between like the big box, you know, like we had Gristiti's and Food Emporium where the supermarkets, a lot of which have been pushed out, ironically, by things like Fairway and Whole Foods. But the idea of having a house account somewhere mm-hmm. was always really exciting to me and not something that you could do. I think, you know, this Market Gentile's Patrick was talking about, you could do that. Citarella on the Upper West Side allowed you to do it until a certain point and then they cut people off. But I think that it's part of the culture that you're a regular, that you're this is part of your daily or weekly routine and that you're going to come back. So, you know, you're good for it, so to speak. Yeah. But they could send a bill to your house.
Do you
I was going to say, has anyone ever had a house account at Egg?
Or at your shop? You go first, George.
We've never had a house account at Egg officially. But yeah, I was going to say all the places I could think of that were really meaningful to me growing up were one of the defining features of it was being able to, especially when you're a kid, to be able to walk in and be like, I'll take that Coke and you can put it on my grandmother's bill.
We still do that.
That's great.
We still do that in our country store.
So you send a bill in the mail to them and they'll send you a check back or do they close out once a month? Personal.
Not necessarily. It's how some of the locals, it's however they can afford to do it. With the national and with my restaurants, I don't make them fill out a page of references and that kind of thing. I don't go through that. We go through an honor system, and it's always worked. We've had accounts for ever since our mail order began. We've had individual and restaurant accounts always. So
is it great. Herbert, do you always eat at the Princeton store? Do you have a house account at Nancy's shop?
Well, I think I owed about a couple hundred thousand as of now.
15 years, you're up to a couple hundred thousand in ham sandwiches
and Tony Packle's pickles. You know,
yeah,
gotta have those.
Yeah, we get those from Toledo, Ohio.
Eric?
And we put them on our sandwiches and so forth.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Eric, do you have a house account somewhere?
Let me think. You know, for a while we had some trade accounts going with local restaurants. That was pretty fun for me. But I guess the staff got a little tired of getting the same things all the time. So
how do people subscribe to your paper? They pay by credit card online?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just about any way I can take money, I take it. I've got PayPal and
checks.
You know,
do you take personal
credit card,
checks?
Check, cash. Yeah,
wow.
Sure.
Well, how much is the subscription for 52 issues?
$25. It's a steal. But if you're out of town, it's a little more. You know, I got a first class mail it to you. So
all right. Now, newspaper doesn't last a long time. It gets, you know, gray and all that. So on the opposite end of the spectrum, what is the oldest object you possess?
My oldest object, are we speaking of hams? Or
anything.
Anything. The oldest thing in your life.
Yeah, because my mind is always on hams. Well, in the way of hams, they're 18 months old, but now I have some antiques that go back to the 1800s. Whoa. In fact, my buildings that I'm out of are 1840 to 50, 1834, and 1865.
Wow.
So, you know, and I love to have the old barrels around and all of the old Coca-Cola crates from a long time ago. And, you know, just I have a lot of old things around me and they feel comfortable.
I always
they're not
this.
Old. They're
I have
vintage.
An Etruscan vase. Etruscan vase. That's always the oldest.
Patrick just, that's like a mic drop for him. He's like, all right,
I'm waiting for someone from Sumeria to like outdo me on that one. Well, now you have all these things. Too. You're in a building. It's very old. Is being part of a family tradition a burden? Or is it somewhat liberating because you kind of know what you're going to do, you know, when you're very young?
Well, you don't really... It is not confining to me. My work has never felt like work. Never. Never, ever felt like work. Even in the height of the Christmas season, I have this saying that says, too blessed to be stressed. and so, you know, and having been come up around the business, I wasn't always working in it because there was a day when all I was the child that was sitting on the bottom shelf eating dill pickles out of a jar because I was bored, you know. And then began working with the men and the hams. I loved it. I loved them. They loved me. They watched me grow up. And, you know, so it's never been what you call a burden to me, ever. And being in the old buildings, we've always been in old buildings with our business. It's just something that's is very comfortable about it.
Would your son think it's a burden? Does he feel pressure to get into the family business?
I think he does. You know, if I begin to talk to something about, if you know, I always have realized my own mortality, and so I've always said to him, you know, if something happens and I'm not here, sissing it, and then I think the nerves get on him with that. So, but it's a long, you know, we never know what's going to happen from one day to the next with any of us, I think he feels a certain amount of pressure. But now when he's in with those hams, he is in his granddaddy's element. His granddaddy's, not mine. It goes back to him the same flavor whenever it went from me, from my dad to me, is the same flavor, the same process.
That kind of goes to something that Patrick and I talk about quite a bit, about things skipping generations, you know, a love for cooking or certain recipes that maybe you've learned from your grandparent, not from your parent, because different things are passed down. It's a different kind of relationship. Did he spend a lot of time with your father?
He did spend a lot of time around my father, and my father didn't talk a lot because he was older when John was born, and he frankly was worn out because we had had this full-scale mom and pop grocery where we did deliveries and everything else, you know. And I looked at Walmart and how they have started gathering the food and then you pick it up, and we used to do that. You know, we've done that. We've always done that. We've done that years ago. We have some customers that can't come in the store, and they honk out front or call us, and we take out what they need. And, you know, so it's whatever service that we can provide. We want to do the very best at that.
It's nice to know New York is not the only town with horn honking.
Now I know now I know when you're honking, Patrick, that you're actually just looking for someone to bring something out to.
Yes, I want food.
You're looking for a delivery. So, Eric, what story is on the cover of the Alameda Sun today?
Oh, well, the story we're working on for next week, it's a little similar to having a cat caught in the tree, like Patrick was making fun of my small town news just earlier. But in this case, we have a whale stuck in a lagoon.
A whale stuck in the lagoon. That is big.
We thought that music went well with the announcement about the whale, but is the whale okay?
It's okay. It's still flapping around out there. They're doing a biopsy on it to try to figure out how it's doing, but the Bay Area has seen a number of these whales washing up that are just starved to death and looking for food in the bay, and it's not really a good place for them to be because it's hard to get back out the Golden Gate. It's just a narrow little passage, and so once they're in there with all the shipping boats and lots of boat traffic, and then they get injured and they're already starving. I don't know. So we think that may be what's going on with this guy, but he's stuck out there in the Seaplane Lagoon, which is part of a former Navy base, which essentially makes up the west end of Alameda. And not really a nice place for the guy to be because it's kind of like a polluted area, and they're going to try to guide him out of there, or her, actually. I don't know what the gender is, sometime soon.
It is good. I hope you're covering these as part of national issues through the local lens, but these are international, global issues. Nancy and Herbert, I ask you, things are changing, right?
Oh, yes.
I mean, the weather isn't just in a natural cycle,
no,
is it?
No, it's not.
Okay.
No, I noticed climatic changes even with my ambient curing. Certain ways I have to do things, and I'm thankful I have a few years under my belt on that, so I know exactly what I kind of know what to do about it.
Will you give us a quick headline in 3 minutes, 2 minutes of the seasons? The ham comes in December, January?
Okay, the ham comes in to be cured in January through about March. They're all hung in the aging house under ambient temperature, no climate control, just exhaust from the outside, from then and smoked and then hung all summer long till about October. And then we begin sales on them. And then, of course, as you know, the older they get, the more flavor there is to them. And we sell a lot at Christmas time, but then we have some that we can reserve for people after Christmas on through the summer months. And of course, George gets hams anytime he wants them. And I have a particular group that is cured especially for him in the free range arena.
Very interesting. And what prompted you to turn to country ham?
Well, I grew up with it. It was a huge part of my family's life and of my childhood. But I'd never had anything like Nancy's.
Where was this that you grew up?
In Virginia and South Carolina. But our sort of country ham, I think, got its footing in the United States in Virginia. It's certainly where the longest tradition was. So it felt like part of just my parents. My mother recalls always having a country ham on the sideboard. They have a table in the dining room of our farmhouse called the ham table, and we just keep one there. And every time you'd get your plate for dinner, you could just, it was almost like the salt and pepper shaker. You just shave a little ham onto it as well.
How many hams would you say Egg has gone through?
Oh,
in 14 years, times about 140
a year.
I kind of keep up with that through my
handwritten receipts. Is that handwritten database?
Oh, no. Now, that database was handwritten in 1987 when we lost our major grocery store. 3,500 handwritten envelopes went down in that fire.
Oh, my
God. I had written every one of them. We were not on computer, okay? We are on computer now, but not fully to where, when we're taking an order, we're looking at a screen, because then you're not connecting with the customer.
Yeah, every invoice we get has Nancy's handwriting.
I was going to say, the invoices we get, because we buy back some of the hams for
our... Is it pencil?
It's pen.
Pen.
But Nancy always writes a little personalized note, or says thank you with some beautiful script handwriting, and you know that it's come directly from her. I think you hug it too, right?
She gives little gifts sometimes with the thing, you know, that you've ordered, you know. And so I remember she gave me a bacon press, which is a beautiful little wood top that you put on top of bacon so that it doesn't curl up when it gets hot. And it's become Anne's favorite device in the entire kitchen. And I love it. I forget what it's called, where you put dirty spoons on, you know, as you're cooking.
Trivet,
exactly. So
trivet, yep.
It's one of our most used items. Beautiful wood. It's aging. And, yeah, we love it.
It's Kentucky wood, and and the handle on it is, and the round part of the bacon press is all one piece.
Mm-hmm. We walk into Roberta's, and she's like, I wonder what kind of wood this is. And I'm terrified she's going to try to burn it, you know, just to see.
No.
She's always burning wood.
Just to see how it does for smoking the hams.
I'm like, Roberta's is not a safe place to leave Nancy alone in.
Oh, my gosh. So you were talking before, I mean, I hate to talk about, you know, death, but you were talking about sort of the evolution of the business and planning for the future. And do you believe in the afterlife? Do you all believe in spirits?
I do. There's many things to life that we don't, just like thought transference, like you get a call from someone you hadn't heard from in a long time. You thought of them 2 days before or the day before. There's a lot to life that we that goes around us that we don't, you know, we don't realize that I really don't believe in coincidence.
George?
I would say I certainly believe that our capacity to understand the world is limited, and it would be foolish to say no. I don't know.
I believe in archetypes, you know, Jungian archetypes that basic humans have basic similar thoughts, or there's a limited number of thoughts, and so that there's a lot of overlap, and there are these myths or mother or sun or moon, you know, things that connect people in a way that is undefinable. So I don't know if it's spirits and afterlife, but archetypes are real. Similar dreams across different cultures, different ages, you know, drawings of aliens that look exactly the same, and it's a 90-year-old guy in Japan and an 8-year-old kid in Detroit. Things like that, archetypes.
I'm with Nancy, more of that sort of like feeling. You know, I know what you mean when you were just thinking of someone and then you... I mean, these days you receive a text message or someone calls you or talking about the idea of there being good energy in the room. Like last night at Egg, I believe that there were 20 more, whether they were spirits or whatever, but there was just an infectious energy by the people who were actually present,
yes,
but also by the celebration of what we were talking about and the culinary tradition of ham and the, I don't know. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. I don't know how you could almost keep the like a memory separate from spirit in a way. Like if we're sitting there, the food's bringing back memories, it's evoking people who can't be there, it's almost like they're there, you know. That's as close to
on
spirit.
Our last show we asked our guests about taste memories. Do you have a particular taste memory from childhood that you distinctly remember that you've maybe tried to recreate but can't, or that you have successfully recreated?
Sun-kissed orange soda. I've never achieved the pure pleasure of tasting that for the first 500 times.
Our biscuit is definitely based on a memory that I had from when I was probably 5, trying to make biscuits in my grandmother's kitchen. And then last night, one of the guests asked me out of the blue if I ever drank Virginia Gentleman. And then we started talking about the label of it, and I haven't drunk Virginia Gentleman in a long time, I'm happy to say. But
what is Virginia Gentleman?
Virginia Gentleman is a very affordable bourbon that comes in a giant plastic bottle.
Ah.
It was my grandmother's favorite bourbon, though. And when he showed me the label on his phone, I could smell my grandmother's house, and I could smell her. Like, she always had a glass of it on the rocks at the end of the day, and I could smell it like I was sitting next to her.
Wow.
It was really, really intense and weird.
Herbert, do you have one?
Herbert and I had a few Maker Marks and Diet Cokes yesterday at the bar, at the Levee.
That's a big step up from Virginia Gentleman, I tell you.
Yes, I do believe life after death is real.
And then what about taste and memories? Do you have a particular, like, childhood, I don't know, could be a favorite thing or a flavor?
Herring roe. Wow.
Interesting.
And my grandparents used to eat it all the time for breakfast. Mm-hmm. You put scrambled eggs in it, and just cook it in bacon grease.
My grandmother loved herring.
What color are those eggs?
She liked pickled
herring. Like gray eggs?
No,
are they
they're
black?
Very light tan color.
Light tan?
Light tan.
Okay.
Do you still...
Poor man's caviar, okay?
Is that something you eat now?
Yes, I order it from a fishery in North Carolina.
I love roe. Caviar. I love eggs, fish eggs. It's the only type of fish I like. So in that same vein, sweet versus salty, both you're one of the American world's most successful breakfast restaurants, and you're a ham lady. Sweet, salty, is that something you think about?
Yeah, I would reject that opposition.
Oh, okay.
I mean...
You want them together?
I want them together.
Well, Nancy's ham yesterday that we were tasting while at Egg... There was that sweet-salty balance right there. I mean, the sweetness of the fat of the long 18-month age mixed with the saltiness of the ham, and she was showing us how in the style she does it, you can even see the little salt crystals. I guess that's a purebred, mm-hmm, sweet and salty.
Yeah, I noticed that particularly with Heritage Foods, with the free-range hams. I noticed that in the fat. Mm. Now, not so much in factory-raised meat, but I do notice it in your ham. And speaking of the memories or something you were able to make exactly like, my grandmother used to make chicken and dumplings. She used to cook her chicken all day long, she would be singing or whistling the old rugged cross or something like that because she was very stout Baptist. And I can make her chicken and dumplings. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and my father verified it. So, so he knew.
Nice. You got to pass it down to somebody now. Otherwise, it's just a taste memory, I guess. Patrick, what's yours? Sunkist?
Sunkist, 100%. I mean, that was at the very peak of these flavor makers' art, you know, where they were still using some natural ingredients. It was the first time in the history of mankind that scientists were working to create flavors. And, you know, and I think they used better ingredients. I think they did use some real oranges in that. Now there's probably not a trace of orange within 500 miles of their factory, but... Something good, and plus the you know, soda, Coke.
That I could sweetens drink a Coke salty, a by
day
the way.
For every day of my life.
I think most, you know, of those sweeter flavored sodas, that has that sweet salty balance. Speaking of,
so your perfect bite, Nancy. Can we get it? We ask that question to a lot of our guests. The perfect single bite, like on your tombstone, there would be one constantly replenishing bite for everybody who comes to visit you. What would you want that bite to be?
Now we're speaking of food?
Yeah.
Okay.
A single bite. The best bite of your life.
The best bite of my life is when they bring a warm cooked country ham in on the chopping block, which goes back to 1917. And I pull some of the meat out of the hock of the ham and taste it, and my father comes right then. Mm-hmm. Immediately. That's my best flavor on that. And then, you know, I'll try to introduce that to everybody that comes in the store that's not been in before, to introduce not particularly that, but the aged country ham, the prosciutto, and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, and our barbecue preacher ham that we have.
What's the preacher ham? What makes it preacher?
Makes it preacher because it's nothing but the best for the preacher on Sunday.
Good.
Back in the old days, you
isn't
know,
it a play on someone's? Is there something also called like a heavenly ham? Is there?
There is a business called Heavenly Ham.
Okay, but no, but that's not like a certain style. This is just the best ham for the preacher on Sundays.
Yes, and it is not an aged ham. It is not an aged ham. And my father started doing that when 60 years ago.
Cool. So before we take a break, one question for everyone. What's your vice? Silence.
Yeah, please. I think we want to answer this question.
So, gluttony. Gluttony. That's me. Gluttony.
That's your
vice?
I'm
in the line of work. It's an occupational hazard, my line of work. I mean, it's like I'm constantly wanting to taste, eat.
Some guy last night at the dinner, I said, oh, what's your affiliation? He's like, oh, my friend is from Kentucky, and her family grew up in the same town as Nancy. And he's like, and I'm just a glutton, so I'm here for the ride. And I was like, okay. I'm like, you're in the right place. Welcome.
I mean, other than how much I gluttony and how I treat people and the way I think of myself and the way, I treat people, other than that, I'm perfect.
Oh, all right. Anyone else? What's your vice?
Gluttony, for sure.
All right, we're all gluttons.
Yeah, this is coming from an Adonis. We should have installed the television.
I know.
In the
too bad this is radio.
George is a good-looking guy.
Nancy, we know you have celiac, so I mean, and I guess in a perfect world, would your vice be something with gluten?
Most definitely. Some of the foods that I used to eat that I can't eat anymore. Yeah.
Herbert, but what's your vice?
I don't even know if I have one. I'm kind of content. You know?
Well, you're going to heaven for sure.
I feel good about it all, you know.
That's a good answer. All right, we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be back with more Nancy Newsom and Herbert Lipscomb and George Weld. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on an eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Dana Cowan, and I'm the host of Speaking Broadly here on HRN. Every week, I conduct intimate interviews with the brilliant, powerful women in the food world. We discuss their lives, their careers, and the ways in which they navigate the world at large. You can find Speaking Broadly wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
And we're back. We are the Main Course OG, broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I have the great honor of being in studio here with Nancy Newsom of Colonel Bill Newsom's Country Ham in Princeton, Kentucky. We also have Herbert Lipscomb with her. And we have George Weld, the owner of Egg. We've been having a great time here talking about the afterlife and vices. And we're going to go right into our section called The Weekly Grill. Nancy, how do you pass down your traditions? Is it verbal? Is it written? Is it recorded? Do you have an apprentice right now?
I have a son who is interested in the business. We'll have to see whether or not he wants, you know, it's becoming a little bit more complicated than it used to be, the business. But some things are verbal, but I would say mostly by doing, you know, by him doing. And that all just depends on what things are like at that time. He suffered an injury to one of his legs. So we'll have to see what happens there and take it day by day and that kind of thing. But a lot of it is verbal and is by doing and by... The more, you know, I learn something new every year when I'm with the hams, every year, and particularly with climactic changes, yes.
And you said you have like three or four people who are always working on the, I know you have people in the shop, and then how many people are helping you when you're actually, I guess,
curing
when the
hams
come in?
Yeah, actually there's probably six, at least six.
You just lost one of your most cherished workers, right?
Yes.
Been working with you for a long time?
Yeah, Jesse. His nickname was Honey Doll because when he was born, he was the color of honey, and he was a preemie, so his mother said he was as small as a doll. So in his community in Princeton, they don't know him by anything but Honey or Honey Doll. But, yes, we did lose him. He had been with us 25 years, and he was a small ball of fire. So,
what did he do for you?
He cut meat. He made sandwiches. He cut meat to vacuum pack for mail order. He deboned prosciuttos. All of our prosciutto pieces are hand deboned. He made homemade hot, mild, and extra hot sauce. He made pimento cheese for us by an old recipe from back from my father's time. And just and enticed and he enjoyed the ladies and the ladies loved him.
Can you tell us about your family business's relationship with James Beard and how that started?
There was a lady from Virginia who had read a book that James Beard had written, and it had another country ham in it that he was highlighting. And she wrote a letter and she said, if you've never tasted Colonel Bill Newsom's hams, you've never had a good ham. So he called the phone number. There was two phone numbers at the time. One was my father's home phone, and one was the store phone. He got the home phone, he got my father, and he asked him to send a ham. And then I was most appreciative that he would send one to Charles Williams of Williams-Sonoma every year, and that he used them to teach within the Culinary Institutes of America. That's how that started, and then he would call my father at home because he wanted to learn more about what my father was doing with the hams.
And he must have sent checks in the mail back then, right?
Oh,
there's
yeah.
No credit card processing.
Oh, yes.
Wow, uh-huh. That's cool.
Yes.
Do you have any of his handwritten checks still in a frame?
You know, I don't. Let's see, that was 75 when he wrote about us in a syndicated column of American Airline magazine, and we had a big bonfire in 87. Okay, in our mom and pop grocery. That was when I took over and went to adjacent building next to us. So I don't think I have any. I have a letter from Julia Child, but I don't have a letter from James Beard.
Your brother was telling me a story yesterday about he was helping out one holiday season, and he said he picked up the phone just to lend a hand, and he tried to do Julia's voice for me, and he went super high-pitched. It was funny, and he was like, to hear Julia Child on the other end of the phone was like just an amazing, an amazing memory.
Yeah. Yeah, my brother was, he was into the thick of things before I came along eight years later, see.
Mm-hmm. One, before we go to George, tell us about Anita. She was a journalist in your local town paper, like the Alameda Sun of Princeton, basically, and then left that world to come work with you?
Yes, she had worked for the newspaper for 42 years, and it was a night, a day and night job. It was more than just a full-time job. It was like two jobs that she had. She retired after 42 years, and along about that time, I had some illnesses, and she came and worked and filled in, and she's been there ever since. I warned her that store can trap you, and it has.
Interesting. Well, now, talking about, by New York City standards, for businesses, 14 years is a long time. So what's it like to run a restaurant that's considered an institution in New York based in Williamsburg?
Well, I mean, Williamsburg actually has a lot of restaurants. The area has a lot of restaurants that have been around for a really long time, like Peter Luger and some of the Italian restaurants. And I mean, Williamsburg changes so much that it, like, even having been around that long, you always feel like, you know, anything could happen any day. I still am amazed when I go to work and there are people there. So it's like, it's definitely not a place where you can take anything for granted.
Yeah, no, we can't. And it was busy all day at your place yesterday.
It was yesterday. Hope it is today.
But I'm sure, like, the L train changes probably gave you a feeling of nervousness. Is the neighborhood going to redevelop? Is it going to become more of a southern and a northern? And
yeah.
Or what percentage of your business are people like within three blocks, within walking distance?
I mean, it changes, and sometimes the L train goes down just because it wants to every now and then. And you know, so we don't have as many tourists on those days, and more local people come in because they can't get out of the neighborhood. It's hard to say where people are from. I mean, one of the great things about New York is you never know where the person you're talking to is from. They could be, you know, have lived here 25 years and still speak another language most of the time. So,
no, I was certain a few of the people yesterday were regulars, and they were like, no, we're visiting from Switzerland. And
There was a Brazilian group, those three Brazilian ladies that were there until very late, like 4 o'clock.
No, it was yesterday was a really nice mix of, I think, a lot of locals who had come in because they wanted to meet Nancy, and they've been enjoying her ham for so long at Egg. And then a lot of people who just stumbled upon the fact that there was this incredible woman there, and that they
were... Very lucky day.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were writing all this mouth, the three Brazilian women, of, like, I guess what they had spent on their 3 days so far. And it was all very small sums, like $18, $6, Metro card, it said, and all that. I'm like... Plus seven, you know, $60 for breakfast. It's like they obviously made.
That's why you give everybody crayons at Egg, so that
they can do their tallies
on how much they've spent on their New York experience. That is too funny.
Is this how you imagine him to be, Nancy, after having talked to him on the phone since 2006?
It is it's a mixture of his place is a mixture of old to me. I feel the old. I see the old brick wall and that kind of thing. The history adds to the comfort of the customer. Everybody in there was very comfortable, and yes, it meets anything I ever expected.
Good.
And they have a wonderful prep kitchen down in the basement that's away from where they're cooking, and that's great. And the employees there are very into what they're doing.
And what did you think of what Nancy said when she made a speech in front of all those great chefs that you had cook for her yesterday? What your impressions of meeting finally?
I mean, pretty much what I expected. I mean, you know, I've talked to Nancy on the phone for a long time, and there were times, especially early on, we could talk on the phone for quite a while. So it felt, you know, and I was saying to somebody last night, one of the things that I think maybe helped draw me to Nancy and those hams from the get-go was, you know, my associations with the South, my associations with food are all through the women in my family. And I could have called a number of other country ham providers, but at no other place would a woman have answered the phone and been the person who did that work. So to hear that voice and the sort of the cadences of my childhood and the accents of my childhood and be talking about food with somebody who sounded like family from the get-go was a very, you know, it was a good, it was a really good connection to feel.
We're proof that opposites attract. Half of my emails, I write the entire text of the email in the title. In the title, it's like six words, and you're the opposite. You're someone who likes to talk, and it's always fun to talk with
well,
you.
Well, I always want people to feel comfortable around me, always comfort and open. Mm-hmm. And the people that come in the store, it's the same way. With meeting George over the phone, I knew that he had a baby on the way or the baby was just born, which is his oldest now, you know, and that kind of thing. And I love talking with all kinds of people. I love speaking with people from out of state and whatnot, too. Yeah.
Good.
And no, and it must be so. I mean, I'm just, we've only spoken by phone and email for the last, you know, 2.5 years. With Patrick, you go back so much further. With George, you're going back 14 years.
And Peter Kaminsky, 25 years.
Peter Kaminsky, who was there last night. It must just, I mean, I know how much I enjoy meeting people who I only talk to by phone. We have customers in California. We work with our processor and slaughterhouse every single day, and they're in Kansas City. You know, for me, when I started at Heritage, I was thrilled that within the first couple of months, I got to go visit our processor, because otherwise, there's people you talk to every day. They're part of the fabric of everything you do, mm-hmm. and to not match a face or, you know, even give someone a hug or shake their hand, I mean, it must be so special to meet. You know, there were a lot of people in the room last night who have yes. met you over the years in Kentucky, but to see you in this space was really special.
Most people finally get to meet me face to face,
and they're disappointed.
And then at the end, they're like, "Yeah, I wish. Let's keep this to a phone relationship."
Yeah.
Thank you. That was a lot of that in there. Well, thank
done,
you
George.
So much, everybody. Thanks
you.
To Matt for engineering. Thank you to you guys for coming in, and congratulations on all your successes.
Thank you.
Thanks for spending some time with us in New York. I know your last time here, I think, was the Fancy Food Show several years back, and I think we have to make it a more regular visit.
Once a decade.
Sounds
once
good.
A decade.
No,
great.
It's been 14 years. We have to make it more frequent
for sure.
than that.
For
like
sure.
once every 3-4 years.
Okay, so. We'll make sure. I'll make sure that my health holds up and that my body holds up, and
we'll eat it.
So
egg
I can come see my
business.
Friends.
Yeah. We'll keep eating at egg to make sure that they're buying about 140 hams a year.
That's a lot. I was happy to hear that number. Sometimes when
well,
you hear these numbers, they're low.
That's what I think that has
right,
it's been
yeah.
somewhere around in there. So you multiply that times 14 years
and times 14 pounds too, right? What are these? 14,
oh no, these
18?
Are bigger. Well, they're bigger than that. The free range that I send to him are bigger than
you
that.
You get boneless. Or bone-in?
Bone-in.
Oh, they're like 17 to 21 pounds.
Yeah,
that's around where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, if anyone wants to try Nancy's ham, you know, between Heritage Foods, heritagefoods.com, Egg Restaurant here in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Nancy has a mail-order business, Newsome Country Ham.
Yes, order for Nancy and visit Princeton. It is a real
There was
jewel
a gentleman at dinner last night who drives about 2 hours, he said,
oh, yeah.
in the right direction, but out of the way. Twice a year to make sure he visits Nancy. That was Bo. Who was,
yeah, he was from Brooklyn.
Yeah, he lives here in Brooklyn, but his family's in Louisiana, and he said twice a year he makes sure that his family drives past your country store so he can stock up.
Yeah, but, we have that, and I'm most grateful for it. Mm-hmm. Most grateful.
All right, well, thank you all for being with us, and we will see you next week. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without the support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.